What's your question for Governor Herbert?
Call 801-575-8255.
This is Let Me Speak to the Governor.
And thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chalais, along with Governor Gary Herbert, and we are taking your calls at 801-575-8255 or your texts at 57500. Governor, the Supreme Court has made a decision on keeping the citizenship question off of the census for now. What is your reaction to that?
Well, again, it's a decision that's just come out, so I haven't really had a chance to explore it in any detail other than just kind of glossing over the opinion, which was passed unanimously. But the underlying questions, there was division in the ranks as far as the answer to those questions. So it's a little unclear. It's probably a little complex. I understand the motivation, and I think as a policymaker that knowing of your citizens, how many are, in fact, U.S. citizens and how many are not, could help us with policy. It's something that would be a factor. It gets a little more, I guess, controversial when you say, okay, those who are non-Americans, non-U.S. citizens, are they here documented or undocumented, legal or illegal? And that's where people get a little bit concerned about that kind of information.
Well, they're concerned they won't fill out the form.
Won't, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there will be a lack of accuracy. So having the information probably is helpful. How you acquire it, how you get the information, rather than some kind of guesstimate or extrapolation from other information you've got, I guess remains to be seen. But we'll just have to wait and see what happens, what develops out of this decision, because I don't know.
All right. Let's take a call from Kelly now in LaSalle. Kelly, hi. How can we help you? What's your question for the governor?
Hi. I would like to ask the governor this question. Are you continuing to work with our federal representatives regarding the Antiquities Act, either trying to do away with it or amend it so that we can better manage our public lands here in Utah?
It's a common topic of conversation. In fact, I just got through meeting with Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue, and it came up in the conversation with him. It's more in line with our BLM properties and public lands issues. The Antiquities Act, which in the early 1900s, was designed to give the president the ability to protect antiquities as they define them, but doing it with the smallest area necessary to protect, you know, the antiquity that's under question. And it's not the use of the Antiquities Act that's a problem in my mind. It's the abuse of the Antiquities Act that's become the problem. Presidents seem to think in terms of let's make it as large as we can as opposed to under the Antiquities Act to make it as small as is necessary. And so that's part of the problem. There is efforts to modify the Antiquities Act so that you have to get at least the local congressional approval or the state legislature's approval so that there's buy-in from the local community. There is the idea of doing away with it. I don't think that's going to get traction. But there was also the possibility of adding just two words, and Utah was the two words that were proposed by our congressional delegation, so that we're exempted from the Antiquities Act, just like Alaska and just like Wyoming have been done. And so they continue to work on it. It's a topic that comes up all the time. Our congressional delegation is working to find ways to bring kind of a practical fairness to the local communities. It's just too easy, well, they're all public lands, and so everybody else outside of this state, Utah or any other state, shouldn't have much to say about it. But in fact, it does impact the backyards. And so, yes, we're continuing to work with our federal delegation to see if we can't make an improvement to the Antiquities Act.
Governor, our first text question is about the Utah Jazz. Mike Conley, he's known for giving back to the communities that he's in and hopefully increasing our chances of bringing a championship to Utah. The texter wants to know how you feel about adding Mike Conley to the Utah Jazz.
Well, I'm pretty excited about it. And it's clearly something that the Jazz are signifying. We want to win something now. And it's not a matter of us see if what we do in the next 5 or 10 years. And so I think the Jazz ownership and their management is saying, let's do what we can to make our team a contender today as soon as possible. So the addition of Conley, I think, is going to help. He's clearly one of the premier guards in the NBA. And so I think it's all positive, and the message it sends to us as fans, I think, is a positive one too.
Governor, our next caller is Brent in Salt Lake. And Brent, what is your question for the governor?
Yeah, Governor, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if there's any legislation brought to your attention on mandatory ID for credit card use. I think if we could get something that like that signed into law, it would eliminate a lot of credit card fraud, and also for the consumer, because nobody anymore these days checks for ID. But yet, there's so much fraud out there, it needs to be stopped somehow. And I was wondering if there's any legislation that's brought to your attention on a type of bill that's mandatory, just you're buying beer.
Yeah, thanks, Brent. It's always been a puzzlement to me, too, that it seems like that less and less, fewer and fewer stores ask for ID when they take a credit card. Maybe that's because we have PIN numbers, and they think that only the owner will know that, when we have, in fact, identification fraud and people steal identities and have the ability to do some mischief. I know if you wrote out a check, which we still do some of that today, don't we? There seems to be more of a propensity to ask for your identification to establish you are who you claim to be. So I don't know whether we need a new law for people who just aren't enforcing the existing law, or if it's bad practice. Clearly, you and your bank on your own credit card and your own checks should have some kind of an agreement that if somebody steals my check or my credit card, you can immediately stop payment. And that means that the establishment now is on the hook. So you'd think because of that, that the establishment would say, before I take Brent's credit card here, let's make sure that this really is Brent, and ask for a ID check. Checking IDs for whatever reason is becoming a little bit more controversial around the country, which I am puzzled about. For example, people are tying this to voting. You got to produce ID, prove who you are in order to vote, which seems like only a reasonable request. But we have some areas of the country where they think that's suppressing voter turnout and suppressing people's ability to, in fact, vote. I don't know why that is, but that's part of the controversy, I think, and part of this ID law that maybe we need to take a look at. So I'm going to get back to the office today and talk to my own general counsel and see what laws we have on the books that are required to have an ID check with your credit card or a check, and see if we have laws on the book or if we need to put new laws on the books. I don't know.
Governor, our next texter says, we have a huge budget surplus. Why don't you refund some of it? He says, or she says, that they could sure use it.
Well, the intent is to, in fact, not spend more than we need. And we do have some surplus, but that's by design. When Olene Walker was in the legislature, wisely so, she said, you know, we need to save for a rainy day. And so we have what's called a rainy day fund, and that does have about $700+ million in that fund. That's one of the reasons that when we went through the Great Recession of 10 years ago, that we came through that much better than most states, because we had some savings to bank on and to help bridge the gap. So having a surplus is an appropriate thing. What's the amount, the correct amount of surplus we should have? Most people think you got to have 6 months, if you're a private citizen, of your annual income. Our $750 million doesn't even come close to mm-hmm. that. But the idea of having a rainy day fund to bridge the gap is an important thing. Now, right now we're doing some tax reform and some tax modernization and having some public comment. And there's been some confusion as far as what our surpluses are that we have. As you grow the economy, if you do this correctly, you have the ability to have more revenue to fund education, to fund infrastructure needs, health and human services, all those things that we, the people, think government should be involved with. And having a healthy economy drives, creates more money. And that allows us to not have to have a tax increase, and allows us to fund, in what is now a very fast-growing state, the increasing demands for state government. So it's a combination of what's the right amount of surplus. Some of the surplus is one-time money rather than ongoing money. One-time money cannot be used for ongoing expenses. We don't do that. It's not like The federal government does, but we don't do that here in Utah. That's what's called a...
They need a rainy day fund.
They do, and they need to have a fiscally prudent approach to things, not have structural imbalances. Because if you borrow money to pay for this ongoing expense, what are you going to borrow the next year? That's why we have $22 trillion plus debt at Washington, D.C. We don't have much debt here in the state of Utah because we don't have structural imbalance. So there's one-time surplus, that's about $500 million, but use that to build roads, to build buildings, one-time issues. It's spent and it's gone. Ongoing money is used for ongoing expense, revenues, salaries, labor, those kinds of things. That, there's a reason why we have a AAA bond rating from all the rating agencies on Wall Street. We're one of only 10 states because we're managing the taxpayers' money very appropriately. And we don't spend more than we take in. We do save for a rainy day. We don't have irrational debt. We have minimal debt. And we grow the economy as the way to pay the bills first and foremost.
We need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. You are listening to Let Me Speak to the Governor. Your calls are being taken at 801-575-8255, or you can text us your questions at 57500. We'll be right back.